Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two
anthropomorphic animals today.
By two anthropomorphic animals who know medium to nothing about Formula One.
This Quebecois Grand Prix reintroduced Mercedes to the podium standings and featured a surprising starting grid with Fernando Alonso in the front row and Charles Leclerc at the back of the pack.
Ooh, I'm Zaylee.
And I'm Maya.
Lights out and away we go!
Hey, Zaylee.
Hey, Maya. It's weird. It's like I can't decide about whether how this changes the way we communicate.
So for those of you, let's do a quick catch up. First of all, Zaylee moved to LA. And we're also recording remotely, and we both picked animal emojis instead of our faces. So now I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're looking at avatars of ourselves. It's really strange. This is probably how the future will look, though. Like, we'll get into a metaverse and I'll be Panda and you'll be Fox, and we'll be hanging out in the metaverse and like touching each other.
We forget our old names and just become our avatar selves. It's kind of terrifying. I'm not a fan of the metaverse, but fun to look at.
Fun to look at. And this race was also fun to look at, didn't you think?
Yes, that's an amazing transition. Yes, I think this race was fun. As you listeners and maybe TikTok people who follow us know, I feel like I've been complaining about the races as of late. This Canadian Grand Prix, I kind of liked it. I thought it was fun. And I thought the circuit was really fun. And I think it allowed for some fun things to go on. So I enjoyed it. Did you like it?
It's weird. I kind of felt like I liked qualifying. I'm not going to say I liked qualifying more, but I liked qualifying a lot. We definitely should come back here.
This was the first time in 2 years, was it not? I thought because of like COVID and then also because maybe they just hadn't done a contract.
Yeah, first time in a while.
Yeah. And also, 338,000 people attended. Isn't that crazy?
It's huge. I'm trying to think of an event. I don't think I've been to an event where that many people were there.
No.
Like, I don't even have a comparison. I was in the airport.
Like, where did they even put all the people? I'm actually confused by that.
Stands and stands and stands. I don't trust F1 with these numbers sometimes because I'm just like, I don't see it.
I know. I'm like, I don't see it either. And actually, even they have new drone shots. Y'all probably have been seeing this, but there's more and more drone shots being featured. And so I feel like I look at the drone shots and I'm like, I don't see where all of these people are hidden.
All right. So have you got any headlines to share?
I do have a headline to share. I have two. Okay. One of them that I thought was kind of interesting was that the McLaren Racing CEO, Zak Brown, let slip some conversations that Mario Andretti was having with F1. So I think this is something we've talked about before on the podcast.
What?
He does IndyCar racing, and he's been trying to get into F1 for a few years now. And Zak Brown doesn't think... He was like, I don't think that the Andretti family's bid is going to be able to move forward because apparently there's been a lot of pushback around it. And I just thought that was really interesting. And then they were talking about how there hasn't been a new team in the sport since the Concorde Agreement of 2020, which felt so freaking like World War II. I was like, what does that even mean? So I Googled it. And the Concorde
Agreement,
yeah, I'm gonna tell you, the Concorde Agreement is a contract between the FIA and F1 teams, and it basically says that the dictates the terms by which the teams have to compete in the races and how much revenue they make, and it's apparently very, very secret. And they've signed 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5 so far, and the last one was in 2021. And so I'm just interested in this process because it feels incredibly secretive, and also like what would be the reason for which like Stefano Domenicali doesn't want an American team in the sport? Like, I'm just curious about like the politics of it all, because it feels like Zak Brown is talking about like that there's like some internal pushback around it. He didn't really specify too much, but
for sure they're regarded as like kind of ghetto. Like, this guy has been trying to get in the sport for a really long time. And I think it's just money, 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 money. The other competitors who are trying to get into the sport are like Audi and Volkswagen Group. And Mario Andretti is just like, I feel like his chances are low because he's not he don't got no money.
Yeah.
But, I mean, relatively has no money in comparison.
They're like, you're
you know
broke.
How expensive it is.
That's why I'm saying, I'm okay. Like, are they lifting, not lifting it, but is the cap for how much you have to pay to enter the sport, are they raising that number? Or it's just kind of like he can't get into the club. Like, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, exactly. But Mans is, he's one of the only two drivers that have won Formula One, IndyCar, and NASCAR races.
Andretti.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Right?
And the other thing that they actually noted was that you've talked about this, Colton Herta, who's an American guy who drives for Autosport, for Andretti, they said that he has a really good chance of signing with an F1 team in the next 2 years. So I'm just interested in how, like, that can happen. Like, that American entering the sport as a driver can happen. But, like, Andretti writ large is kind of, like, still has the red light.
McLaren wants Colton so bad. Zach Brown can't keep Colton's name out of his mouth.
Yeah. And I'm also, like, why is he so obsessed with this? The Andretti family, I guess, is he just wants more American representation? Or maybe it's the Colton connection that he's trying to, like, preserve. I don't know. I'm like, why is he the spokesperson for this?
All right, headline number two. One thing we never discussed was the fact that Lewis Hamilton is doing a movie with Brad Pitt.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that.
It's kind of old news now, but we just never brought it up on this podcast, which is pretty surprising.
Thoughts?
My thoughts are inevitable, and also it's inevitable that there was going to be a huge F1 movie coming out, because this is so ripe for movies. There's not much metaphor that has to go on, because it's extremely clear that everything these drivers feel emotionally is what they do on the track the next Sunday. And so it's just very easy to create a movie where the winner is losing or the loser is winning because of how they feel.
Yeah, you're like, it writes itself.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with that. And the plot of this story, actually, for those of you who don't know, is like, there's a retired racer who comes back into the game and he has to race the game. He has to race against like a new young rookie driver or like a hotshot driver. And like, that's
basically Fernando Alonso.
Fernando and Lewis. Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. But I think it's going to be so good. I would love to watch that. Like, I'm actually so excited. I wish I could see a preview of that.
I'm less excited, though, about the fact that they're doing better. Like, I don't want to see Brad Pitt in it.
Oh, I kind of do. Is that weird?
I want to see, like, someone surprising, like a black man or like a...
Yeah, the junior driver's going to be black, probably. You don't think there's going to be one black person in there with Lewis Hamilton? I feel like he'll do some work.
Not if... We'll see how much influence he has, but it's almost like the way Hollywood would be attaching celebrities, but then... Just
I know
kind of, like I feel service. Like they might be which I hope that's not happening. I hope Lewis has some creative control,
not him writing movies. We need you focused on the race car, bro. Focus in the car. We don't have time for you to be doing screenplays on the side, please.
All of what he's doing is just a character study, because he's literally in this position this season fighting against a younger rookie who young hotshot.
Did you hear, this is like not Formula One news, but I think it deserves mention. Formula Two driver was suspended. Yuri Vips, which is just a crazy.
I know.
It sounds like a nickname, Yuri Vips.
Yuri
Vips was suspended with immediate effect after using a racial slur online. Yeah.
Did you hear the slur?
He said the N-word, right? I didn't hear specifically what he said, though. What was
I like went and found the clip, because I just needed to know the exact tone. I needed to know the exact reaction of what everybody else in the call too.
What was it? He's, like, what happened?
He was playing a game. He's obviously classic. Shooting at some plane, live streaming it with friends and other friends who are also involved in like F2 or just junior driver programs. And he's, you know, he just shoots down a plane. He's like, inward.
Oh my god.
And his friends were like, Yuri, ha 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 ha. But also like, they were like, you could tell they were nervously like, Yuri, Yuri. And I don't even think Yuri really noticed.
What is it about freaking people's live streaming video games that just makes them say violent and vile things? Why?
I can't believe it's in their vocabulary. I genuinely can't believe that it's in these like young Europeans men's vocabulary. Maya and I went to South Africa when we were younger, and it was kind of shocking even to hear like black South Africans say the N-word. So, like, how does it reach Yuri Vips?
I don't know.
What does he have
what
to be
business
into?
Does he have?
Yeah, is it just on these forums as well?
I don't know. And I don't mean to say, like, oh, video games is why people say that word. It's just, like, I feel like there's so... I just feel like I've heard of so many live streams where people say horrible things. So I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know why it's in his vocabulary either. That's bizarro to me.
Yeah.
And so now he's without a seat.
Now he's without a seat. They kicked him out. Everybody in the comments was like, oh, my God. Here we go. They cancel him. Cancel culture is the worst. Because every Red Bull fan is just...
I know.
The politics fact that it's of Red Bull fans are kind of weird.
No, the fact that it's a Red Bull is like tea, I think. And you know what? I was looking online at F1, you know, whatever, F1.com. And I was like, let me see if this article pop up on F1.com. They did not mention it at all, which I just thought was in, like, you know, it makes sense, yeah. I guess. But I was like, kind of annoying that they wouldn't. This is like pretty big news within the sport, I feel like. Do you have another piece of news?
Yeah, I've got more news. Should I talk about it?
Yeah.
Biggest news, I think, of this week is all the goss that comes out of the floor / porpoising drama at Montreal.
Netflix was following Mercedes, and apparently the team principals had all had to come together with members of the powers that be to talk about the porpoising issue. Because as you guys know, a lot of teams, aka Toto, was really campaigning for the FIA to intervene. And so I guess they were just talking about that.
Yeah. And this was like a classic meeting that they have every week. But mm-hmm. Horner said that there was a little bit of theater involved because of the fact that the cameras were there, and it kind of got out of hand.
One witness said Mercedes boss Wolf lost his and went into full Abu Dhabi spec, a reference to the meltdown he had when Lewis Hamilton lost out on the title in Abu Dhabi.
That I understand. Toto, there's no way that Toto is like mentally doing well.
It's a hard season. I think it was. I can imagine it being an incredibly hard transition from where they left off last year with being like the top dogs to how they're doing this season, which you always say this daily, but you're like, they're not that bad and they're in third, which I guess right now is true, but still I would also be mentally struggling, I say.
Yeah, I sympathize with them because their standards are just so high and everything that's not winning probably feels like losing for sure. But one of the things that I thought was interesting about this conversation is like, and I know I sound anti-Mercedes for some reason throughout these last few podcasts, but I promise you that is the team that I love the most. Mm-hmm. But a lot of other teams were right in that Mercedes advocated for the FIA to put out this new rule. Mm-hmm. And the technical directive was issued while they were on the way to Montreal. And Mercedes showed up with a floor that sort of matched the technical directive. Mm-hmm. And all the other teams were like, bro.
How did he know?
Right. That's the what's undergirding the conversation and some of the arguments. It's like the teams are tired of Mercedes kind of being able to get what they want throughout the paddock. And one of the things that Horner suggested is like the porpoising issues are a problem with the actual car. Mm-hmm. And not the regulations, which is something that I've said on this podcast. It's just like the regulations did not say you had to porpoise. And but it's so true. And like, if you can't build a car that can't porpoise, then you go slower. And I feel like the technical directive should have been sort of like, you cannot have porpoising above a certain amount, forcing those who had porpoising to go slower.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than you cannot have a floor that looks like this, forcing everyone who solved porpoising to change their floor. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying.
And so that's why I'm sort of sympathizing with some of these other team principals. But Horner got nasty. Do you want to hear these other quotes?
Yeah. I was just going to mention one ago, but it's not that nasty. What's the one you were going to say?
I mean, maybe this quote isn't as nasty. I just, you know, anyone says anything that's like a little bit mean and it's a big deal in F1 because everyone's so buttoned up and put together. But they were just like, Christian was like, there's an element of theater.
Yeah.
Because it was filmed. And he was like, so, you know, maybe with Lewis's movie coming along, they're getting him enrolled for it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's rude. That's
rude. So rude.
And I was going to say, read the thing about there's an element of theater and drama. I feel like sometimes Christian talks like that. And I don't want to get too like too highbrow about it, but it kind of feels a little homophobic to me. Like this reliance on like, oh, this is theatrical. This is drama.
Right.
It's like, it feels like it's, do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not really explaining myself, but
yeah, I mean, not, it's not even necessarily homophobic,
feminizing or something.
Yes, exactly. That for it to be dramatic, that something is bad about that.
Yeah, it's like you're whiny with
feminine qualities.
Yes, yes.
So it's an insult to Toto to imagine that he would do something feminine, as feminine as be dramatic.
Yes, as complain is, or moan, yeah, or whinge, as they say.
But the craziest part is that that Horner is the most dramatic and most theatrical man in the sport. He literally narrates, he commentates on his own races, yeah, he during the race.
He phones in.
Which is crazy. He phones in. He talks more than freaking the commentators do.
Yeah. So anyway, I also find that to be a bit grating. I can't wait to see that on Netflix. So
I do wonder though about how Mercedes even thought they were going to get away with adding that second stay, apparently, is the thing that they wanted, that the technical directive established, that they brought on even kind of before the technical directive was established. Like, I do wonder how they thought they were going to get away with that without a bit of hubbub. They put it in free practice 3 and then they had to remove it because there was so much like hoopla. They, like, everyone got so incensed and angry because they were just like, you haven't given us enough time. Like, y'all were basically finessing the FIA into doing this and then had it all in the bag and ready to go.
Okay, that is interesting. And if I was another team, I would be suspicious of it. But to Christian Horner, Christian's point, like, Christian is always like, this is not a game about, you know, just about racing. He's always like, you got to tickle the bear. You got to feed the FIA. You got, you know what I'm saying? You have to, like, play the rules game. And so I can just imagine. I don't know, this is not that intelligent of a comment, but I can just imagine a different scenario going which Christian was like,
they would all do the same thing.
They would all do the same thing. They would all do the same thing, right? I don't know. I don't know if it was like quote unquote wrong. I just don't know like what, I feel like I have to know more details of the situation, but
I do think that Mercedes has a really hard time accepting that they're losing.
Yes, we talked about that on the podcast before.
Maybe a harder time than some other teams. Like, I don't see Alfa Romeo making this big of a stink. I think I see Alfa Romeo being like, damn.
Okay, imagine Williams like breaking glasses in their section. What? We're 10th? Okay. You expected that. You knew. Okay, so we're at the Jules Villeneuve circuit. It's a really twisty, turny circuit, 70 laps. As I said, 338,000 people attended, which is, I don't know about those numbers. But one of the biggest things of the start of the race is we had Fernando in the front row. Fernando was second, and he hasn't been on the front row for 10 years.
He was driving like a maniac, and he absolutely deserved it. It was crazy.
It was crazy. I think he's a crazy person. Like, this is not a hot take. I just feel like he's actually insane, like scary and like kind of vindictive. Did you hear about that thing he said about Hamilton?
No, what did he say?
Oh my God, let me pull it up, bro, because that was kind of weak. Alonso asked his team where Hamilton came out after Hamilton, you know, came out of the pits. And they told Alonso he came out behind Ocon. And then Alonso goes, so we know what to do now. Isn't that so, like, just villain-esque?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, why are you...
He really thought he was going to be able to hold Hamilton behind.
Like, come on. And it's so interesting because they referenced this, the commentators referenced this, but there was I think the Hungarian Grand Prix was one in which Alonso helped Ocon forward by, like, sort of defending behind him. And so Alonso this race was, you know, hoping that Ocon could return the favor, even though it didn't really work out that well. But just like the idea of being in debt to Alonso in any way, shape or form is not something I ever want for myself.
No, and I also think Alonso had, I mean, I'm not gonna say his hopes were too high because he definitely started on the front row, but what opportunity did he miss that got him to a place where he really wasn't in that fight? Was it that he didn't pit for the safety
I think it was the timing of the safety car didn't work out for him, and so he wasn't able to pit at the right time, and I think that really threw him off. And this was a really interesting race for that reason, because the best strategy was a one-stop strategy, and we saw I feel like this is always the case with pitting, but like it's super reactive. So like when one team makes a decision, then everyone else is like, what do we do?
Yeah.
And like then the safety car throws things into it. So this was a really interesting race for that reason, because there was a lot of different like strategies going on with that.
Yeah, for sure. I love a good safety car and seeing the way it changes the race.
Yeah, so let's go through a little bit of the starting grid. Max is on pole, then we had Fernando Alonso in second.
Yep. Sainz third, Worth Hamilton, Magnussen fifth, which is crazy. The Haases were fifth and sixth.
The Haases are like the ugly stepsister who gets a date. It's like, I feel like they've, I don't know, they kind of just pop up in surprising ways. It's fun. It's
but funny. They're not ugly. Magnussen and Schumacher are both fine, low-key.
They're both really fine. And also, did you see that Mick Schumacher accidentally wandered into the pits and Mercedes, and Toto was like not happy with that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I didn't watch the video, but I did just see a little headline about it. He just didn't seem impressed by that.
I kind of don't understand why Toto's mad, because he feels like they were spying on him.
Not spying, but he's just like, why? Yeah, I guess. Toto gives me that he would be like territorial.
Toto, when he gets in a bad mood, I feel like nobody is safe. All right, and then we've got Ocon and Russell all the way in eighth, because in that last part of qualifying, Q3, he puts on slicks while everybody else is still on inters in the wets and tries to do this like crazy lap, and it really didn't work out for him. He got too overconfident, and I was just like also thinking he didn't have to risk it at that point. He was going faster than Hamilton even during qualifying, but then did like the silly thing that got him an eighth.
The formation lap was also really weird. I don't know if you noticed that. It felt like just kind of messy. So Max gets off really clean as soon as the race begins, and then Fernando Alonso gets under pressure by Sainz, but they both have really good reaction time. So like the first three sort of get off really clean and good. Lewis is immediately putting pressure on Sainz, which is cool. Magnussen comes up, he's kind of side by side by Hamilton. That was kind of fun to watch. I was like, "Ooh, is Magnussen gonna overtake?" I thought Sainz was. I was really happy with his performance this race, by the way. He may have been my driver of the day.
Really, Sainz?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I think he took the car as far as it could take him. It was really cool to see.
I thought that at the end of the race, Max, on much older tires, I didn't think there was much of a reason why Sainz shouldn't be able to get past him. And so that's why I would hesitate to give him driver of the day.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, because he was put onto much fresher tires and he had a bit of a while to overtake Max, and it felt like Max just had the best of him and drove really like in a dominant way, even on much older tires.
Put a foot wrong, that's what they say all the time. By lap 8, Sergio Perez is done. And I wrote in my notes, I lolled. He was like, guys. So I was like, here we go. It's kind of sad to see, though. So, and that was a gearbox failure. So then there's a virtual safety car. Hamilton takes he immediately pits. And it's an early pit, so it locks them into the strategy of pitting twice, even though I think one stop was better for this race. But it would have worked out if there was a later safety car, and there was, so it actually was fine.
It's cool on the hards. I want to see another race where, do you remember last season where there would be like, there were some races where someone would essentially like, their tires would grain completely and they'd use up all their hards, and then eventually the hards would come back to them in the end because they basically turned into softs.
Mm-hmm.
Like they rubbed off all the wear until the tires became softs again, which was just cool. And they were hoping to see that in this race, but I feel like nobody held off for long enough to see that effect. But I just remember that effect being really cool, and that came up here. People were like, "Oh, are the hearts going to be able to come back to them?" But it never happened, really.
And we already mentioned this earlier, but obviously Charles was starting at the back of the grid, so he's sort of fighting his way up to the back. He gets into, you know, he's actually doing kind of well. He moves up into 12th. By lap 14th, he moves up into 12th past Lando. And Lando didn't really fight him, which is kind of funny because I feel like, because it's just like, he was like, this is not my battle. He's like, I'm just gonna, he didn't really defend that hard. He was just like, bye.
Mm-hmm. But around lap 20, we get the second virtual safety car because Schumacher retires.
Yes.
He kind of pulls over in the same spot where Perez is.
Yep.
Where Perez retired earlier.
And he has a Ferrari engine, so that made me question. I was like, is something going to happen to the Ferraris now that has gone wrong?
Yeah, and the crazy part is that when it was happening, didn't it look like he was just getting into some... Like, didn't it look like he had just been scared? Because there was a moment where someone tried to overtake him. I think it was maybe Albon or somebody. And then he kind of went off and people were just, the commentators were like, oh, wow, did he just get spooked? And then they realized, oh, it was actually a technical issue because people underestimate Mick so much.
Oh, damn. Not Mick is going to have his day one day.
We have some good overtakes on Alonso. Sainz passed him. Hamilton passed him.
And he's writing all of those down in a notebook and like waiting for those debts to be repaid, bro. One day. And at this point, he also hadn't pit. So it makes sense that people are just overtaking him so easily because he's on these tires for mad long.
I thought it was kind of interesting to see the Hamilton-Russell dynamics this race.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh.
What?
No, I was going to say, I do have in my notes that by lap 38, Russell was a half a second quicker than Hamilton, which is just interesting.
Yeah, there was a moment there when he got lucky with the safety car, he started to kind of fight back. Like, at first he was like, okay, Hamilton's winning this race. But then when he got lucky, I was like, oh, are we about to see some real fighting?
Girls are fighting.
But no, not so much.
By lap 45, Tsunoda pits, and it's... And as he exits the pits, he just goes straight into like the sidewall. I don't even know how to describe it, like the side of the thing.
Yeah, and it was all his fault too.
It was totally all his fault, and he had to pay £300 fine, which is for him negative 2 cents. It means nothing, but
I mean, we do know now that he is the driver who makes the least.
I know, so maybe he's like, oh, I'm penny pinching.
Yeah. But also around that same time, Leclerc pit, and it's a slow stop.
It is P12. A slow stop. Yeah, it's about like 5.4 seconds, which is not good.
Comes out into traffic. Lap 44, we're stopping pits, and we see him come alongside Hamilton, and it was just like a TBT moment.
A TBT. You're like, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, there used to be a time where they couldn't even drive next to each other, but now I guess they're they're fine.
They mentioned that in the cool down room when they were all in there. They were like, the commentators was like, what a difference a season makes between these two. I'm like, yeah. But if I were Hamilton, I would still be so freaking bitter. I don't know how they're able to like do this, to be honest. Okay, so Lando Norris is hit. This is by lap 49. Lando Norris is hit with a 5-second time penalty. We haven't mentioned Lando so far. It wasn't a really good weekend for McLaren at all. So
no, it wasn't.
Womp womp.
Why did he get the 5-second time penalty?
He was speeding in the pit lane. He was speeding in the pit lane, which is not allowed.
But Zhao was having a good race.
Zhao is having a good race. Yeah.
Zhao takes P9. He overtakes Vettel.
Which, if I were like a racing, that would be huge for me. You know what I mean? It feels like a little huge. Like a little boy's dream come true.
Yeah, and then lap 59 is when it's just like Verstappen versus Sainz down to the finish.
Yeah, and were you rooting for Sainz in that moment or no?
I was, but then after a while, I was like, all right, I'm gonna stop rooting for you, bro. You can't do it.
What I liked hearing about his strategy, and Verstappen even noted this, was that like Sainz would sort of charge and try to get as close as he could to Verstappen and then like pull back to sort of charge the battery so Verstappen could see him sort of like, I don't know, like soaking in the battery and then trying to use it as much as he could, which I thought was just interesting to hear about. It just reminded me of edging. It's like he's edging,
but it's also like a little bit scared, like okay not this time, next time, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like outbreak him, outsteer him.
Yeah.
Steer faster than him. Outbreak him. Like, take more risks.
I know.
And I feel like that's the difference between Sainz and Leclerc. Like, Leclerc in that situation is throwing it all to the wind. He's going hard. He's, like, going crazy. He's taking risks for first. I don't want to be mean, but... Yeah,
no, it's fine. I feel like I'm just more sympathetic to it because I just feel like I'm thinking about the tire management and even with how Verstappen usually races and how he was racing in this one, it's like... I don't know, being aggressive can just hurt your tires, but well, it don't matter, he lost anyway, so
he did. So the top 10, the final standings were Verstappen, Sainz, Hamilton, Russell, Leclerc, Ocon, Alonso, Bottas, Zhao, Stroll. It's so crazy how Alonso ended up behind Ocon. Was there a penalty involved in that?
Yes, Alonso had a penalty. Alonso got a penalty, dude.
Okay. What did he get a penalty for? Weaving.
Yes, he was weaving down the straight. And he got a penalty. Do you have a driver of the day or any takeaways or any thoughts, final thoughts on the race daily?
Maybe my driver of the day was Leclerc, back of the grid to fifth. That's fun. A pretty impressive drive.
Yeah, I enjoy that. Yeah, mine is, as I said, Carlos. I just I feel like he was giving it his all. What I was going to say is, in his post interview, Lewis had a rag, and I was like, why is he the only person who ever has a rag? Like, he always has a rag. He's always like cleaning sweat from his forehead. It's just something I noticed. No one else. I feel like
aesthetically, he's the one. He's the one who actually cares about. Well, first of all, Angela definitely provides him with them rags. Angela be there with the rags, bro, immediately.
Okay.
But also, he might be the only one who cares aesthetically about the fact that he's sweating.
All right, maybe
like, for the cameras.
Yeah.
He also sweats a lot.
He does sweat a lot. He does sweat a lot. Yeah, he was giving very like press ready vibes with how he was like, how you going, Montreal? Everyone's like, hey. So anyway, it was just funny to watch that. The sweat dabbing, I was like, they need to get other people some rags because I'm sure everyone else sweats too.
Ugh. Oh my God, I can see it now, his big ass forehead.
The sweat bee.
It's a lot.
I want to get into this fun game idea I had that was inspired by the last episode called, okay. I'm making it up, bro. I'm going to just say it like it's a real game. It's called Crisis. The game is called Crisis. Okay. And so the idea is that like, I'm going to give Zaylee and perhaps Zaylee would give me some scenarios and we have to respond how we would respond as if we were like PR for these teams.
Okay. I want to go first. A warning comes in from a TMZ rep that they have a story on Lewis that might be bad news. And concurrently, there's someone on Twitter who begins speaking about the fact that Lewis's nudes may have been leaked. Lewis comes to you and he's like, I'm going to be honest, I don't know what they might have. You ask him a couple questions about what might be recorded. He says, yeah, I filmed some videos. I was blackout last weekend. I was with a couple models. I'm not sure if it's just nudes. I'm not sure if there's videos too. It could be anything. What do you do in that scenario? The videos haven't come out yet. TMZ says they might have a story. You don't know what exists. What are you doing? Are you waiting for the inevitable? Are you making a statement beforehand?
First of all, I feel like you need to determine what's out there. Like he was just so black, so he doesn't remember what happened, what he did, I guess.
I think in a typical Lewis fashion, he's embarrassed to even tell you.
Oh, well then we have a problem. But yeah, so I think I would definitely try to get ahead of that. I feel like he's a powerful guy with powerful lawyers. So low key, I would be like, okay, let's do a little gag.
Lawyer up.
Yeah. Mm. Like, you know, lawyer up. Let's do a little zip zoop. So that person can't speak anymore. This is actually so sick if you think about the power these lawyers have.
A gag order.
Jesus Christ. Mm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Give him a gag order. I feel like, I don't know, gag order. And then the idea is that TMZ might release this.
Yeah.
Then can we sue TMZ? I mean, is that on the table?
All right, so you're suing everybody.
Well, I
think... And you're not responding to the contents themselves.
Here's the other half of my answer. I feel like a more, like, new age sort of strategy is to, like, lean in to, like, the idea that these things are coming out if you know there's no way. Like, I would link up with, like, feminist people and talk about, like, like, I don't know
why it's not okay to leak. Yeah,
like, I think there's a statement to be made around it. Like, if I were Lewis, I'd be like, yo, you need to donate money to like a victim's fund for like revenge porn or something. I don't know, like, I think there's
It's also like, was he assaulted in this
yes
scenario?
Exactly. Was like, consent given?
Why was he taped while? Yeah,
exactly,
for sure.
So I would try, if I couldn't sue everyone, I would like try and make it a social cause.
Okay,
21st century.
Crisis averted.
Crisis averted. Did I pass?
Yeah. I guess after each of these, we can be like, crisis averted or...
Crisis pass fail. Okay. The setting is, it's like preseason testing, okay? You're a team that has been financially struggling. I'm half reading, half paraphrasing. One of your newest drivers has a very generous billionaire father who has invested a lot of money in the team. Okay.
I feel like I'm playing the F1 team principles game.
You do. You're like, yes, no, reject, accept. The father of this driver has become increasingly involved in learning about like the back end of how the cars are made, the mechanics, the this, the that, like the actual trademark secret stuff.
Okay.
You find out that some specs on your newest car have leaked. Okay. And your face is And the, I don't know, see this part I didn't really do the connection, but just take my word for this. Okay, so the public trace it back to the fact that, you know, Malcolm just doesn't shut up about stuff and he just has a big ass mouth. The father has a big ass mouth.
So the father.
The father has a big ass mouth. But you need his
money. So Malcolm is the father.
No, Malcolm is the driver. The father, it doesn't matter. The father of the driver is the person.
The father of the driver won't shut the f- up.
He won't shut up. And maybe some details about your new car is leaked, but you need this driver's, you need this guy's money, basically, because your team is doing so poorly. So, like, how do you address that? Do you confirm, deny? Do you then punish? You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you do? Do you have a conversation?
So, I think a big mistake that a lot of these teams make is that they don't realize how much power they have, and that if you have a billion, the billionaire dad is not revoking his money. The driver is already sound down for a season. There are only so many teams that will take a paid driver. There's only like one paid driver max per team, mm-hmm. and there's only 20 spots in F1. And chances are, if this billionaire is giving lots of his money for his kid to sponsor this kid's team, mm-hmm. he loves his kid, and the kid has wanted to drive in F1 all of their lives. And the teams, what I'm basically saying is that I feel like the teams have a lot more power than they think they do over these paid drivers.
Okay.
And so I would be like, you're banned from the paddock.
You would ban him from the paddock.
Yeah, and I dare him to take away his money. Like, at this point, the information is already leaked. There's not much I can do about what's already happened, except for everybody shut the f*** up. You know what I mean?
Mum's the word now?
Yeah, mum's the word now. If you leak anything, you're fired. Like, you know what I mean? Just reinforcing those rules, but also this guy's banned from the paddock. And watch, I dare him to take his money back. He won't. No balls.
You don't think he would do it? So, like, the Lance Strolls and the... Lawrence Strolls, and who's another, like, daddy? Nikita Mazepin's dad. You feel like they would
I was thinking more of a Nikita Mazepin situation. Lance Stroll owns the team, so it would be kind of crazy if he was leaking shit, but...
Yeah. No, he does own the team. It's true. but you're, like, you're banned from the paddock, and you just feel like he wouldn't...
Yeah, and I know for a fact that there are some dads that are banned from the paddock.
That's true. And what would you say about the leaked information about the car? Would you release a statement on that? Would you confirm? Would you deny? Would you just stay quiet? What do you think the best recourse is?
I guess I would deny. I think that there are ways that, I'm trying to think about how people go about it. Because people say stuff like, you know, well, you know, the car is obviously still in development. And
right, you know, yeah, like, so, like these basic, broad... Yeah. General statements.
Broad general statements that are like, you know, we've tried lots of different directions, but the car is still in development and nothing has been confirmed for the season. Like, basically, like, whatever you, like, scoffing at it. Like, yeah, of course, there are designs. There are lots of designs that exist. But.
So gaslighting. I love how the response to this is, like, just be very general and, like, yes, of course. There's many designs that are potentially available, but nothing's been released and confirmed. Like, I like that way of going about it. Like, nothing's been confirmed. That doesn't mean it's not true.
Nothing's been confirmed. And the way I'm responding to reporters is with this face of, like, confusion and disdain. Like, what?
But what if people...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm acting like this is so real. I have so many thoughts. what if someone's, like, asked you directly, like, so we've heard that so-and-so's dad may have been the person to so-and-so. Like, I don't know. What if people address it directly? What would you say?
Basically, if you answer that question, you're confirming that those are your designs. Mm-hmm. So you got to say something like I said, those designs aren't necessarily what we're going with for the car.
And yeah.
Like, you got to be careful. Those are how they trick you up. If you were to, like, actually accept the premise of the question, the premise of the question is accepting that those designs are your designs. So, like, you got to be more like, you know, got to be careful about those questions where the premise is the answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Leading questions.
Because reporters will trip you up. The media.
Fake news, man.
Fake news.
This is the next crisis. Are you ready, Zaylee?
Wait, was my crisis averted?
I would say your crisis was there. It definitely existed.
You don't think I averted my crisis?
I guess you did.
That's exactly how an F1 person
it is. It's hard because when I think about crisis, I'm like, did the thing not leak? But it's hard because, like, whatever information is out there. But I guess you did avert the crisis of... Yeah, you averted it.
The real crisis would be every single team preempts your upgrade.
Yeah, they're like, we got just the thing for that.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the senior drivers on your team accidentally spills that the newest driver on the team went through a particularly unsavory hazing situation. when the interviewer like questions him, he's like, oh yeah, we all do it, it's fine, like every new driver does it. He kind of like that, he that's how he covers it up by being like, yeah, I did it too. So the press is obviously unhappy with this, fans are obviously very unhappy with this, and questions about the team culture and like toxicity come up surrounding your team. What do you do? That's deny. It.
Deny, deny, deny. There's no proof.
He literally was like, yeah, man, we all do it. You're like, my driver was on drugs. He absolutely knew nothing of the situation.
You're right. He did. Deny knowing anything about it.
Okay.
Is what I would say. Like, deny, like, the, you know, this the team culture does not support that. I think what the drivers do amongst themselves, you know, something like that.
So
something
distance.
Along the lines of, yeah, we're distancing ourselves from the drivers themselves. You know, this is a factory of 1,400 people. The drivers are really young. They're young men, you know, who are doing the jobs of their lives, kind of have it in like a, you know, like these young boys, they like to have fun. Boys will be boys.
This is so toxic.
Us back at the factory, we're getting our work done.
Us quiet loyalists back at the factory.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they blow off steam. They need to, they're young drivers. They love blowing off steam. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're engineers. We're working on the car, and performance is our biggest goal. Always comes back to performance.
I will say, I feel like that was the most, like, yeah, that feels exactly like what they would do. They'd be like, we're focused on the driving and not these.
Yeah.
And not even rumors, because the driver was stupid enough to be like, yeah, we all do it. And everyone's like, okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound nice.
Be like, I honestly, before, I had no knowledge of it, but I, you know what I mean? You got to have this, this like whatever. Like, okay, I didn't know anything about that, but I'm worried about the car and I'm worried about porpoising right now.
So you wouldn't be nervous about how that would affect, like, how, or is that even a concern of your team? Like, how, you know, how people perceive the team culture? We were talking about that. Some teams care more than others, you know?
I think whether or not you care about team culture, you have to respond that way. I'm trying to think, would me caring about team culture change the way I reacted to the question?
I'm just wondering, like, would a Mercedes versus a Red Bull, how would a Mercedes respond to that versus a Red Bull? Would that matter?
Okay, then maybe I would say, if I was Mercedes, I would say we're doing a full investigation into it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And, you know, there will be repercussions. And then I would fire a couple people.
Just for face value?
Yeah.
I think someone else might be take more of the team bonding angle of, like, this is team bonding.
We use it to bond.
Not, like, completely affirming it, but just being, like, making general statements about team culture and team bonding.
You know who would do that?
Who?
Yas Capito.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's squeezing driver's balls and stuff, so.
Yeah, he's the vibe to do that. Like, if you're truly a dominant team that might actually be scaring drivers, I feel like you can't really get away with that. But if you're, like, a baby team like Williams, you can be like, yeah, we're bonding. We love each other.
I completely agree.
It's a little more scary to do that if you're older.
Yeah.
If you're bigger.
I think you would avert that crisis.
Thank you. Crisis averted. We should have a button for that.
We should.
There has been a hospitality worker who travels with the team.
Oh, boy.
And is well known in your paddock for, you know, she brings people, she knows people's coffee orders and people just love her in general. One night, everyone's celebrating and, yeah, she's found dead in a hotel room with one of the mechanics.
Bruh.
I feel like mine are a bit more far out than yours.
Jesus Christ.
The mechanic knocks on your door in the morning and wakes you up and is just like, I don't know what the fuck happened. Crazy night of partying the night before. And y'all have to get in a in an airplane the next day. What are you doing?
Oh my God. That is actually the worst possible scenario like you could have given me. There are so many things I'm thinking about. The first thing was like, how are they going to make it to the race? Oh, I mean, the first thing he's okay. So the first thing is they have a man in front of me who may have killed somebody.
So I guess. So you sound like you're about to call the police, law enforcement.
Well, it's like if that's me speaking. If I was a team principal, dang, what were the circumstances of her death? Like, she just was found dead, like bloody, or just dead? Like, no, she wasn't bloody. She was just
maybe she overdosed.
like they had been doing drugs.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, I could tell you this guy's getting the boot immediately. Like, as soon as everything else has gone through, like, he has to go.
But is that suspicious?
Well, no, because it's like, why are you doing drugs on a work trip also? Not even work trip. That's just their work. They don't even call it that. Damn, Zaylee.
So you're not covering up the murder.
You can't. How are you going to cover up the murder? This woman's family is going to be like, where's Martha? And Martha's going to be.
The thing is, okay. Let me not interrupt your crisis.
I'm just like, here's why. It's like,
I've watched too much Scandal. I'm Olivia Pope in this situation.
Because I'm like, if you didn't, like, let's say we tried to be sneaky and sly about it. Let's say, for example, that you asked some of the other engineers to help us out in, like, figuring out what to do or, like, whatever. It's like, if that all got out, bro, then it's done. Like, it's done. It's just like, how could I cover it up and also get away with it? Like, I could cover it up, but could I get away with it?
I think the first question to the guy, if I was covering it up, is who saw you?
Yeah.
Who would know that you were in this room with this woman when she died or close to when she died? And can you have an alibi? Because it's easy enough for me as a team principal to say, like, I called him into my room and he wasn't with her when she died. It's also like, it's not necessarily true that he murdered her.
No, it's not. It's not.
So it's just like, do you want the bad press of, and the rumors of a mechanic being found dead with her? Or do you just want the rumors of there was a chef who once works in hospitality who overdosed?
Because it is interesting in being specific in like what leaks or like what stories kind of come out, because I think something is going to emerge from this. Like something is going to come out. And like, what is the thing that's going to least damage you the most? That is going to do the least amount of damage. I feel like firing a mechanic who was on drugs or like letting go of a mechanic, maybe there's a lot of turnaround in that position anyway. Like that's something that could be like, he could be shuffled out in a way that was more quiet. You know what I mean? You give him a little severance. You like, don't tell anybody about this. But the thing is, I feel like it's like there may have been other people who have seen or like were aware of this happening. So I feel like there's a lot of different strings that you would need to tie up.
Yeah, this one is kind of unavoidable. Low-key. Sorry about that.
What would you do? Like you would try and hide it?
I think I would. And maybe that just speaks to like my fight or flight instinct. Like it's almost like you have to choose whether to fight or flight in this
immediately
scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I wake up, if someone wakes me up in the middle of the night and they're just like, this is dead in my bed, I'm fighting.
That's interesting.
And I think maybe I would regret it later, but I'm just saying my instinct would be to be like, who saw you? How do we like basically pretend this never happened?
Yes. No, I completely agree with that. And I think once you're on, like, it's like a train. It's like once you make one decision, you feel, I don't know if this is necessarily true, but I think one would feel like they're trapped in that train. It's like, now I've let you into my house. Like now we've talked about it. Now I've acknowledged the fact that it's kind of like if I called you tomorrow and I was like, I killed somebody or whatever. If I came to you and said that, would you like immediately kick me out or would you be like, what? And like want to know more.
Yeah.
Because I would want to know more personally.
For sure.
Okay. Do you want to wrap it up then? This was a really fun game though. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wheel to Wheel.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say donate.
I feel like we were a little bit off today, but we're working our way back. I'm sorry, folks. I just moved. I'm sitting in a room with no furniture.
Give us some grace, guys. Please.
Give us some grace, guys. We're still giving you content, so just
shut up. We have some crises to avoid on our own, okay?
Our own time. We're avoiding crises every day, left and right. Just like you.
We're normal, just like you. Okay, so we'll see you guys next week, and stay sexy.
Bye.
Bye.